All right, testing. How are we doing? How's this sounding? I got a thumbs up from Swati, then we're doing good. All right, we'll get started in just a few minutes. I am fighting Sid up onto the space. Looks like he is leaving and coming back. There we go. Yeah, it always takes a few minutes to get this thing rolling. Sid, how you doing?
There we go. Yay!
All right.
But what I didn't realize is you can't do all of this properly off a desktop. It just doesn't work right. So I've jumped across onto my mobile and everything's cooking on gas now.
That's awesome. Yeah, we'll get started in just a minute. Just want to give people a chance to jump in. Yeah, the whole desktop thing really weirds me out. Why can't you do a space on desktop? Doesn't make any sense.
Nah, it's backward. Never mind. I'll have to get an emulator set up or something to make it a bit easier for me to be adding pictures in the background and doing all these wonderful multitasks. But for now, I'm just going to sit with my brew in the chair and hold on to you all in my hand.
I love it. All right. Yes. Let me ping a few different places and then we'll get this thing rolling. So about a minute or two, and then we'll get rolling. All right. We've had too much awkward silence. Let's get this thing going. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Addicted to Art. This is a series from Well FM where we interview individual creatives who are also collectors as well, learning about their journey into art addiction. I'm your host, Decryptolorian, and today we have a very, very special guest. His name is Sid XO. I don't know how... What do you like to go by, Sid? Do you like just Sid?
Just Sid, yeah, just Sid or Sid XO. I mean, whatever you want to say. You can call me Susan if it makes you happy.
Okay, Susan, not a problem. No, it's been great because first of all, welcome to the show. It's been I was a little jealous because Nightmare actually had you on this particular show about a month ago or so, maybe two. Yeah. And I was on vacation the one time I take vacation, and I was on vacation for a week and I had to miss it, and I was a little bit jealous, just a tiny bit, because I actually really love talking with you. So aside from me, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, well, thanks. Busy. I'm quite tired. I got a lot of things in the pipeline going on, but yeah. Otherwise, just I'm always doing well. You know, it's the standard response, but it's actually I don't really have down days and a bad time. I usually end up having a pretty good day, regardless of what's going on in it. So yeah, it's all happening, and I'm pretty chilled at the minute. It's quite nice this setup. I've got my feet upon my desk. Obviously, it doesn't really matter what things look like in my office because we don't have to put the video on. So all is well with the world. I can relax. I was going to do a little set for you in the background in case it was on a video stream.
Yeah, I was pressured to do a space because we had you on video before, so we're kind of trading off a bit, but hey, you know, it's I always love hearing your opinion about literally everything about NFTs, but before we get into that, I really really want to ask you, hey, who's Sid? I mean, for those of us tuning in and haven't really explored your work or you as a person, tell us who you are.
Awesome. So Sid, Sid isn't my real name. Sid XO is not my real name. But actually, I have been called Sid for many years in my family and close friends. So that started out, the story behind that the name was my nephew couldn't say my name properly when he was born, and he just always used to call me Sid, and it just stuck with me. It stuck with me for like 20 years now. He's nearly 20, so like 19. So for the last 19 years, I've been called Sid because that's what I got mistakenly named by my nephew. And just when it came to having some sort of a branding, as I'm already Sid, and that's how I'm known, I just wanted to add on the XO, like the hugs and kisses kind of, just like the love, like share the love kind of thing. It's all pretty simple and straightforward. But yeah, as far as my art journey is concerned, apologies for those who may have already jumped on and been on the website and listened to the previous Addicted to Art. I don't want to go over too much of the same ground, but I've always been obsessed with visual and computers. I've always been obsessed with drawing and painting. It's just been something that's been ingrained into me for ever since I was a little kid. I mean, I tell a story about how my first art was actually painting things and drawing things on the walls. And it literally was. I couldn't help myself but just record everything that was in my head. And I didn't realize until later on in my life that being able to record things on a piece of paper is not a skill that everyone has obtained in their lives. And it's potentially quite a sought-after skill for some people. So I didn't realize the value of that, but I loved to get the thing that was inside my head and just whack it on a piece of paper or a wall or a rock or just whatever I could, chalk, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I've got a strong tech background because when I was about 6 years old, I got my Amstrad CPC 464. I don't know who remembers those, but show me some emojis if you remember those things. I mean, I love that. That whole when you load, you like you stick a cassette in, you press play, and then you have to wait for 10 minutes. So you might as well go and have your tea or play football for a bit. And then you come back and lo and behold, this game's loaded and you actually get to play it. But then if you die, you got to start the whole thing all over again. It was so funny, like the patience we must have had as kids with computers. But yeah, so from a very young age, I was really into just the coding and being able to make all the stuff that I could do manually by painting and drawing. When I realized that you could emulate that on a computer, it was just like, wow, this is all of the things culminated into one place. And you add music to that as well, because I'm quite a musical person, and I really am obsessed with music too. So you just bring all those creative worlds together, and it was like, this is my playground. Why would anybody want to leave? They just stay here all day. So yeah, that's kind of a quick sort of overview, if you like.
Yeah, I love that. So you were so obviously you loved you know, drawing and being creative, and then you found this this love for technology. Would an average day back in the, let's say, the 90s or late 80s, would you find yourself on, you know, Microsoft Paint or something, trying to create some things? Or
Yeah, big time, big time. You see, my dad, he had a pretty good job. And so early on, sort of late 80s, early 90s, he was having all sorts of technology that was constantly being incorporated into his life. So he'd have like the fax machine, or the mobile phone would be in the car, or and it was because he was in sales. It was all about the communication and how can we speed up communication? How can we do things more quickly and digitize things so computers can get involved? And so as soon as he started bringing his first laptops home, that was just, you know, the Amstrad took a back seat. In fact, I distinctly remember age like 13 and a half, going and getting a paper round. And I think it was about £7, something like that, for doing a paper round. So I'd do all the mornings, all the afternoons, and then the Sundays was like a double round on a Sunday. And I realized that if I could do that multiple times, I would have loads of money, and that would mean I could buy a Mega Drive. And so, or Genesis, you guys call it Genesis, I think, in the States. And so what I did is I convinced the guy at the paper shop to let me take on more rounds. I ended up taking on two or three rounds in order to do this. And I just built up all this cash in a really short space of time. And I bought a Sonic the Hedgehog Mega Drive pack. It was like 130 quid. And it was like this dream offering. And so that really, the laptop playing on Paint, and then the playing on the Mega Drive, my Amstrad sort of just took the back seat, because, you know, cartridges, boom, whack that in, turn on a game, and you're ready to go. And of course, the speed of delivery and the colors and things that you had, once you got onto Windows, everything changed. You weren't restricted to the green screen. You had the proper sound cards and things like that built in. So, yeah, I had a really cool experience, because as a child, I've been able to grow. It's sort of been on the cusp of all of the big technological breakthroughs. And so I've been able to see it all roll out. Whereas people that are slightly older than me, it might have been a little bit too technical for them, and it just didn't come into their lives so easily. And people that are younger than me, well, it's just sort of, you know, the stuff that you've seen is old hat. But the birth of the internet and the birth of all of those consoles and the cultural status that suddenly computers had got early on in my life was just, you know, it was an explosion, and it really changed a lot. You probably have the same sort of experience, did you not?
Absolutely, and you're taking me down memory lane here, because okay. Yeah, I did the same thing you did at some point, you know, in my life. I said, wait a second, I can work and can get some money, and then start buy this console. And yeah. And you know, I remember when I first, I think I took whatever money my parents had planned for my college fund, and I ended up buying a computer with it. And then and, you know, I had to upgrade it, so I, you know, like I worked the entire summer to get like a stick of RAM, or you know, to take it up to like another four megs or two, you know. But yeah, I resonate with you a lot, because we did grow up in that era of getting to see like the PC become a thing, the gaming, you know, consoles become, you know, very popular, and then a lot of our culture as kids, now we see it all the time. I mean, it's everywhere. But our culture was kind of a subset at, you know, in the beginning, and then growing up with this tech. Yeah. I mean, we did get to see the birth of the internet, and here's the question for you, because, you know, to tie this all into your art.
Yeah.
How did that experience when you were a kid and going through all this like super fast? I mean, we think it's fast, but it's been, well, I've been, this year I'm going to be 41, so it's been quite a number of years. And, you know, it's like, wow. I mean, it just happened so fast. And how did that trigger you to change how, you know, you look at your art, you develop your art, you know, throughout the years? I mean, you probably started just drawing and then you found technology and then, you know, et cetera. But did it have a big effect on you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so if I look at the earliest kind of links, you know, like if we were to say that board on School of Rock, if you were to take that board and he basically pins out all of punk and then he works his way back to blues and gospel and then works all the way forward to like hip hop and techno and what else, you kind of have these funnels in your head and the earliest possible link or point that you can get back to. For me, I went to a place that's a little bit like the Works. In the UK, we've got a place called The Works that sells puzzles and just books and just the generic kind of stationery. But it's a big shop and they've got one in pretty much every town. And so as a kid, we had something that was like that nearby, and I used to go there and I used to spend whatever money I didn't spend on games, I would spend on books. I used to just love absorbing information, and I remember buying this book that was on sale, and it was all of the world's greatest fighter planes. And I just looked at this in awe, like these things that could go into the air and you could ride in it and do like 10 million miles an hour upside down. It was just like unbelievable. It just blew my mind. And so as a kid, I'd got this book, and not only did it have photographs of all the planes, but it had like this schematic of them all, like these top down and side on and all these different views. And so I learned quite early on what all of the planes looked like from various different angles and learned to sort of translate that kind of stuff. And I recognized in a lot of the photographs that you would have a camo plane or a grey plane, but the thing that stood out on it was the marking of the actual pilot and the mechanics or whoever was painting these planes would also put like the squadron logos on the side. And that just really resonated with me because I loved that kind of thing, like those bright colours, and it was really attractive. And so that kind of tribal thing that I saw being painted on them immediately linked me up with comic books and the whole graffiti and looking at games like, for instance, Streets of Rage. On the Mega Drive, you're playing that, and in the background there's all this graffiti on the walls and stuff, and they'd taken their time in designing that game to incorporate just those little things like that. And that all of those kind of links are the bits that just resonated with me throughout my childhood. And it was constantly the cartoons, the 80s cartoons, like you got Thundercats and He-Man and the Supernaturals and whatever other Scooby-Doo, all of those color palettes just came together as like this same thing in my head, and I used to see all of them crossing over with one another and linking together, and it was just so inviting to me.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely it does. Yeah. and so I have to say that I had that too. Maybe not in the, you know, I cannot draw worth. I mean, I just can't. I've tried. I guess I haven't really tried, but I'm not really I wouldn't say I'm very good at it. But I do agree with you that I want to say radical, you know, the whole 80s and yeah, you know, everything, and the 8-bit graphics, and then the transition to 16, you know, and just being able to live through that technology, you know, the gaming and using your mind in a different way, because, you know, what we're used to back then was watching, you know, a screen, and people were basically – you know, doing things on the screen, and you really didn't really interact with it. And in the generation before, they're listening to somebody on a radio, right? And they're not really interacting so much. And, you know, and then so to actually use your mind to move these sprites, you know, these characters around and interact with the world, you know, in a very, you know, I want to say it's, you know, interact with the art a bit, you know. I think that that definitely has shaped my mind.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it hit yours too. And that graphic change from, you know, your 8-bit to 16-bit, you know, even to your 32-bit, I mean, has that, and I look at your art and I say, okay, this has some nostalgia for me. This has that 80s vibe. This has a lot of these colors coming together and creating these pieces from that era, right?
Yeah, that's so what I'm into. Unfortunately, you can't see behind me, but I always keep all of my paints out in a spot where I can just grab hold of something. And I've got quite a specific palette that I use. Everything that's in there, you would just look at it and you'd go, I could paint the Thundercats with this. And it's just that's the way that I want it to look. That's what I want people to sort of take away, specifically with the colors, like the whole comic book and the sort of super flat, you know, the Murakami super flat stuff. He's a real hero of mine, and I just love how he takes really basic shapes and puts things together with, mixes up the colors a little bit. I take a lot of my inspiration from the stuff that we've talked about, but also some of the artists that have paved the way in that sense. And I really resonate with iconography. There's something in seeing the text and people's logos and just the stuff that we see on a daily basis, that when you flip it around and you chop it up and you recolor those components, you're taking something from popular culture and you're repurposing it, and you can make something else out of it, like I do, like you see some of the things I've created. And then when people say that, they're like, oh, wow, that's beautiful. I mean, this, I could never do that. I just can't imagine how you come up with these ideas. And I do hear that a lot and think to myself, really? Do you not look around you? Do you not just walk around and just see all of this stuff everywhere? I mean, it's bursting out the seams all over the place. I can only imagine the kind of inspiration I would get if I went to Tokyo. Like, my dream is to walk around in Tokyo and just take as many pictures as my phone can hold of everything that I see and just get completely lit up by all of that, because I could see that being so awesome. And yeah, there's a deeper, meaningful element to all of the stuff that I put together. I purposely use that palette because of the fact that, you know, there's that nostalgia, and I love, specifically for me, I just love those particular colors. However, I do like to paint things in a way. I remember Frank saying the other day that I saw this thing that was completely in your style, and just, you know, it's so you. And I do that purposely because I want you to remember something. And it's not just who Sid XO is and all Sid XO has made this thing, but also I see things in a slightly different way to other people. And growing up, I had a lot of struggles, like real tough, just trying to get things into my head. I was a really clever kid, but I just couldn't learn in the way that the schools needed to teach me. And I didn't understand how all of that was supposed to work. So later in life, like move forward 30 some years, and we've gone through, as a family, we've gone through around about 8 or 9 years, probably 9 years, of not having any sleep, because my little lad has got such severe anxiety that he can't even see his way through the night for longer than an hour without needing to be near somebody, and just is not content. And we just didn't know what to do. And we got involved with what are they called? Like a counselling organisation. And we quickly discovered that he's got autism. And we went through all these experiences that he was having, and he described all of this stuff. And I just literally imploded during those sessions, recognizing every single part of what he was saying applied to me and the things that I'd been through. And they're like, yeah, but you know, that you're here now and you've managed to make it this far. Congrats, pat on the back. A lot of other people haven't been able to do that. They've capitulated under the strain, and that, you know, whatever was going on in their lives has sort of overwhelmed them. So I felt eternally grateful that I've managed to get this far, having had the sorts of experiences and just listening to how things could have been when we were going through these sessions. And so the way that I see things, I try to describe in what I paint. And seeing things differently is almost me not fully being able to interpret everything around me that's going on in the way that it's potentially being transmitted, and maybe getting a percentage of that, a large percentage of that. I've obviously got a lot better over time, especially since we've had this diagnosis for my son. But yeah, you start to recognize how I actually see things in a really different way. And sometimes I might say something and people laugh, but actually I'm just telling the truth. I'm just saying, like, an unfiltered thought. This is coming out of my brain. Have a listen to this. What do you think? And people are like, man, you're so funny. That is amazing. I'm thinking, bloody hell, that's literally just what I was thinking. I wasn't even trying to make you laugh. But yeah, so in order to be able to convey that kind of stuff, that aspect, I've purposely misinterpreted all the colors, like a surrealist, if you like, kind of an aspect. And no greater place did I find than the sort of pop culture for being able to relive the nostalgia as well as express this kind of stuff, and then push all of that together into something that we package as art. And I really love the fact that I've got that that medium to be able to express it all through.
Yeah, and you really do a good job expressing it. You know, the work I've seen is just absolutely fantastic, honestly. I just posted one, but before we get to NFTs, I wanted to ask you, what type of mediums do you use in real life?
Yeah. Oh, lots of stuff. I really love kind of rich feeling stuff, rich, like the textures. So I use the paper by a company called Honnemühle. It's a German etching paper that I use. And it's just so beautiful and thick. It's almost like card, but to look at, it's got this wonderful texture to it. And so I use spray cans and acrylics. I use pencil to lay stuff down, but I mainly will use acrylics and spray paints. I stencil things and I freehand things, and I just do whatever's necessary in order to get the job done on what the thing is that's inside my head. But then I also, I really love going back to nature and getting involved with wood and using oak. I create these oak canvases and paint up, and I even freehand paint like one line art, and then route it and then fill the insets and sand it all up, and kind of make all these beautiful little creations out of that kind of stuff. And as well as all the digital things. So if you say to me, what tools do you use digitally? You are probably better off to ask me, which ones don't you use? Because I pretty much use everything that you can think of across the board. And I just love to be involved in whatever I can, to be learning new stuff. I've got one of those kind of brains that it can't stagnate. It can't just sit still and just be pleased with a finished product. There needs to be something that can be done to improve this. We've got to go further. We've got to do something more, deeper. however you want to say.
Yeah, I love that about your work, honestly. And when I posted one up above, and folks, if you get a chance, go check it out. It's on Foundation. But we had a contest, a musical contest over at the Well members. And this piece was just, I mean, come on. It's fantastic. This should be on Times Square on a monitor somewhere. It's really cool.
I love that piece. So the idea behind that yo-yo is many, many moons ago. If we go back to, I can't remember what the year would have been, but Studio Max, you know, 3DS, 3D, yes. Studio Max. And I was on version 3.1, I think it would have been. 3.1. And it was a platform that I could pull in music. I could also paint stuff in, like, what would it have been, Photoshop 4 or 5, 4.5, something, and then chuck those files across, use a few alpha maps and things like this, and eventually build up these layers. I found very quickly that if you, rather than having to model stuff 3D, you could emulate the model just by layering up lots of flat files that you could paint up in Photoshop and so on. So I'd draw some sketches by hand, I'd scan them in, and then I'd sort of vectorize or even bitmap some of those, and then alpha everything up so that you've got these layers. And then it was almost like those, I don't know if you've seen those cheesy clocks from like the 80s or the early 90s that people would make, where it would have like a photograph, and then the photograph would be resized about 10 times, and there'd be like a 5 mil difference on each layer, and then they'd be cut up, and so you'd have like these pieces like a collage that were overlaid on top of each other with a gap in between them all, and it would almost look like it's popping out at you. And I would create things like that. I would also make like these pop-up books. I thought it'd be really cool to have like the technology that's in pop-up books, but to have in a 3D program, and just rather than just keep having it open and closed and folding the pages over, to sort of tell a story by moving the camera around within just the one pop-up and kind of animate things to the camera moves and stuff. And so, yeah, I really got quite heavily into match moving. And when the HDRI came out, I'd got all the books and all the background tools, and I was well into that stuff before a lot of the guys that I knew, photographers that were friends of mine, they didn't even know what it was about. They'd never even heard of it. And I'm thinking, mate, that you can, it's real light. Like, you've got light that comes out of the sky and goes into 3D and you can use it. Why are you not taking advantage of this? And so, yeah, that just because of that, I got recommended and pushed forward by one of my friends that's a photographer into doing some stuff for film. And there was a lot of background bits and bobs that I'd do, like cleanups on, where, say, you might have a forest, and in the forest around here, what they'll do is they'll walk around and say, this tree needs a load of branches taken off it, so they spray a big X on it. This tree doesn't, and they'll spray a circle on it. And so you'll have a film where you've got all of these X's and O's and whatever on trees, and it looks terrible if it's a medieval film and you're actually expecting people to believe it because all of the trees have got spray paint all over them. So then what you'd need to do is that they'd send stuff to me, and I would have to, this is going back a long time, this is like before I could even use discrete combustion for like pixel mapping and stuff or tracking. I would actually have to hand paint, I would have to roto all of these individual trees in a shot that might be like a minute long, and it would take me days to do. And then I'd output all of these PNG layers and pack it all back together into a video, uncompressed, send it through. You can imagine what an uncompressed video size is. Go back like 10, 15 years, longer, and then say, this has got to be transported somehow to somebody else. It was really quite a faff. And you look now, people just download a program for free and they they chuck a video in, and AI just, you point at a pixel and go, I don't like that. And AI just finds all of them and cleans them up for you. It's pretty impressive. I mean, I do like that aspect of how things have moved forward to the point where we've got these very handy tools. But yeah, there's a little bit of history for you.
Yeah, and when you were speaking, it brought back a lot of memories from the different, you know, just screwing around in the different programs back then. And yeah. Wow, I mean, you and I have both seen it. We've come so far, you know, and it's crazy how much it's, and I still love using those soft. I mean, I still love using it. I mean, yeah. I try to use it every day because I freaking love it. You know, and it's changed so much, and but it still feels the same, you know, but you just get more little things to tinker with. It's fun.
It is. It's true. If you can take something that's existing that people love and you can just manipulate it and make it better by 30 or 40% and then redistribute that to people, they will love it and your adoption will be huge because the familiarity aspect is the consistent thing that we look for. And that sort of ties into the stuff with my art is I try to have something of not just consistency across what I do, but consistency with the time and the kind of audience that they would recognize and feel that familiarity. The people that I'm pitching these things to, when I create them in my head, they will immediately, I feel, gravitate towards it because they'll see some of that stuff. And if I just completely came off the wall and designed something that is super futuristic and wacky and so out there, I think it would be difficult for people to take on board because it's not what they're used to. And so that it's very much like this in the NFT space. I've been quite blessed to have been involved in some huge tech projects over the years. And the major things that I've seen regarding adoption have always pointed towards people taking small steps so that lots of people can come together and move together gradually towards the end point, rather than just taking a huge leap and saying, right, you've got to fend for yourselves now, figure it out. Because what you'll end up having is a little bit like what I was chatting to Rune the other day, and he mentioned something about someone saying, we've got an emergency at work. And to me, in the tech world, emergency means I can't be asked to do it and I need you to come and do it for me. That's what the person's asking you. They text you and they go, I've got this emergency. And you're thinking, no, you haven't. It's not a bloody emergency at all. All you want me to do is turn up there and do it for you because you can't be bothered because you've actually got to do something or you've got to look something up and learn it for yourself. And so, yeah, it's sort of seeing those things throughout the years, those changes and seeing the tech and being involved at the coalface and seeing the big picture on some of these things and behind the scenes. It's a long game that we just have to put up with. You've got to grit your teeth and you've got to get on with it. You've got to stay positive and people will come. People will enjoy the stuff. Once the love of the space, once the respect for one another and all of the great things about whale community, the reasons why people stick around because it's so positive and because it's so uplifting and, you know, people give their time for nothing other than love of the space and the art, the NFTs, the technology, the Web3, the programming. And so, yeah, it's just we have to find that area of familiarity and try to bring that out. I think that is the point I'm trying to make. We've got to pitch that first so people don't get too scared.
Absolutely. And that was a fantastic tie-in to your art. I love that. I want to transition to NFTs, and this is a perfect segue.
Yeah.
Because I want to hear, first of all, how you found out about NFTs. And then my second question is, having grown up like similar to me, how did you, what was your first impression of it? Because I'm going to follow up with my first impression, and then I want to hear yours first, though.
Yeah, cool. Oh, okay. Yeah, no worries. So I'd looked at very, very long time ago. I'd been watching how the whole thing with Bitcoin had gone. And I'd seen all of these people, you know, prophesying how it was the saving, it was the financial savior of the world and all this kind of stuff. And then and I looked at Ethereum as well when Ethereum started to come into view. I think Ethereum was somewhere in the region of about 60 quid or something silly like that, and I looked at it. I thought, oh, I wonder if it's worth risking a few quid. So I chucked a few quid on board, and then I chucked a few on Bitcoin, and then I read all of this absolute bullshit that said if you do this and you do that and you flip every other day, and then what you do is you buy it in the troughs and you flog it in the peaks and you flip it here and there. And I was looking at it thinking, well, how the hell does anybody do all of this without having some sort of automated system in the background in order to be able to help them predict it and analyze this stuff? So I wrote a couple of programs to sort of try and help me with it all, and ended up just getting way too complicated for me to be arsed with. And it died a death. And I think I made about 150 quid, something like that. And I thought, yeah, great, whatever. And took it away. And then a few weeks later, it shot through the roof. And all of these coins just went ridiculously high. And I saw around about the same time, there was this, because I'd been putting all sorts of beautiful things together with my artwork and whatnot, and just having a good time off that, not paying attention to what was going on really with the NFT stuff. And people started talking about blockchain, and I'd been working in Internet of Things, so connected devices talking over the air with one another and creating these bits of hardware that sense the environment around you and then map things in rooms and count people and do all this kind of stuff and chucking it in databases and, you know, putting it onto a screen so it's in a usable form. And so I remember people talking about blockchain and looking at it and thinking, well, it's the least efficient way of storing anything on the planet. It's bloody rubbish. And that was my thought right in the beginning. And so I didn't bother going down there. I ended up using MongoDB for storing all of my bits and bobs. And then fast forward a little bit, and I see there's this kid, and he's talking about the weird whales. I'm like, what in the bloody hell am I seeing now? And then I listened to it, and actually, it made complete sense. Like this kid had been, what people didn't realize, what they didn't read in all of this faff that was going on. People were looking and they're going, there's a kid here and he's made £350,000. I was thinking, forget all of that. Forget all the money. There's a kid. This kid's 13 years old and he's put this stuff together and somebody has actually got behind him and people have backed him and it's actually grown. There's a community in the world that exists that supports the next generation and believes in them enough that they're going to put money in their pocket and they're investing in that kid's life. This is very interesting. And that was the hook. That literally to me was like, there are people in there that have the same kind of heart that I do. So it ain't all bad. Maybe there's something more to this. And I got in, and I did my investigation and then I got my OpenSea account. I think actually I was talking to you the other day and I said, that it was my 1 year cryptoversary coming up. But I looked on OpenSea, I've actually got two accounts, and my original account that I didn't intentionally open to set up NFTs off is from September. So you could argue it was my cryptoversary last month. But just the fact that a year ago, all of that was kicking off, and I saw this kid being taken so seriously, that was it. I just wanted to get involved. And I was like, well, maybe I can translate some of my art across. And then it got really tasty because what it meant is rather than the traditional stuff that was doing quite well in my life, the digital stuff, people just were not taking seriously. My love for digital went as far as me making stuff and just keeping it on my computer, or people commissioning something where they wanted a thing doing for a website or a video or a 3D thing. But people weren't taking seriously the fact that artists were valuable digital artists. They were just like 10 a penny throwaway robots that sit on a computer. And this world where a digital artist was valued pound for pound against an IRL artist was really interesting, because I understood some of the technical skills that are involved in the pieces that people have made, that you could look at and go, well, that's a 10-minute wonder. And actually, it's not. There's a lot of time and care that's gone into something. Some of these pieces, look at, for instance, Giant Swan. And one could argue, well, what if they just bought loads of models and they did a little bit of sculpting in the background? And that's not what's happening. You've completely missed the point on that one. Look at the work. Recognize that all of this stuff is modeled from scratch. All of this stuff, he might have a library of things that he incorporates every once in a while, but you look at how well constructed this stuff is. The skill set in order to be able to get it to the point where you can walk around it and it's as beautiful as it is from all these different angles, it takes a lot of work. And it's difficult to get that across to people that haven't been involved. You can give someone a brush and go, paint me a circle on the wall, and the best circle painter in the world could come and just go and do this beautiful circle. And this circle now is more valuable than Joe Schmo, who's just painted an egg shape 1,500 times and still can't get it to look like a circle because of the skill. The value is in that skill. And that was recognized in this kid who is 13, who has taken entrepreneurial skills and taken graphic design skills and put them together and made something. Sorry, I don't want to take too much time, but yeah, I really, really got into it from there.
That's an amazing story. And yeah, I do remember when that happened, and man, is that inspiring. It's, it's funny, like these origin stories of how folks get into the space and start, getting, learning about it and what drives them too, because like you said, I mean, you've been involved with tech before, and you started looking into the tech and you're like, this is kind of weird. Yeah. And it is, right?
Yeah.
But I said I would share, my view of it when I first started very quickly, but I'm used to dealing with web design, like graphic design, computer analytics. I mean, I've spent my life on computers basically, and my professional career has been based on them in one way or another. But what really got me was the decentralization of databases, right? It's like we always have these centralized databases. If they go down, maybe we got a backup. But really for me, it was like, wait a second, does this mean this entire network is the database, is the ledger? And what you store on here cannot be manipulated or changed afterwards, And so that was like, wait a second. And then to learn what you learned about the digital art and becoming more valuable, because people do spend so much time and they do have really good skills. You got to value those skills. And thus before, it really wasn't valued that much. I mean, yeah, sure, people get paid and people have full-time jobs, but, doing a piece like an art piece, you don't typically see those in a gallery. And seeing that this tech can actually change people's minds about what is art, and start valuing those skills, that is what really stuck with me and really wanted me to stay, basically.
Amazing. Because that takes us full circle to the whole, we started with the computer games and that to us was art as kids. There was something emotive, like I was drawing Sonic the Hedgehog on my maths books, and I was drawing Mario on the toilet wall or whatever it might have been, because there was something in there that I wanted to project, that somehow culturally I'd bought into this computer game tribe, and I just wanted to outplay what was inside of me so that other people could see that thing. And I just felt like it was so cool. It was a little bit like, I always laugh about the S I was talking to Noisy about it the other day. There's this like hexagonal S that you learn in like it's like this graffiti 101 thing. You'll probably know what I mean if you just type hexagon S in Google. And it was almost like that, like this iconography. It's like your the first things. If you say to somebody, I want you to just take this marker and just go and draw something on the wall, the fallback point that we normally go to is the thing that is like this focal icon in our head. So we do like a smiley face, or we do like a cartoon character, and we just can't help ourselves, but that's like our fallback, because it's like programmed into us that we've bought into these little tribes of what we feel is cool.
Yeah, exactly. I know that S you're talking about.
Cool, Sam. Yeah. What else we got?
Well, before, so geez, this always surprises me how fast things, you know. but if you wouldn't mind staying another, you know, 10 minutes, we got about 10 minutes left, but maybe if you could stay another 10 minutes, that'd be awesome. Because I did have some more questions for you.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, I got plenty of time, mate. I just don't want to be talking people's ear off and we're going flipping eyes. You're going to shut up in a minute.
Oh no, people love it. they love your accent. They love hearing you. So that is good. But I want to get this PoApp out of the way, because I know we have our PoApp hunters. I already got one PoApp meme in the chat. So let's do that real quick. Yep, there's a spaceman looking for one. He's on a journey. So the secret word for the PoApp. I'm gonna grab my phone too, because
I've got to get this, man. We need this.
And I'm on two phones, which is wonderful. So you probably hear the little echo. For some reason, I can't turn the... Maybe there we go. Okay. I just got smarter. Okay. So go to your PoApp app. Go to the secret word and type in color is everywhere. Oh, I spelled everywhere wrong.
I spelled color wrong. There we go. Got it.
Cool. Oh, this looks nice.
Lit. Love it.
Look at that.
Good job. Who does all of these? Do you do those? Does each person that hosts the space do their own PoApps, or do you send them through to the PoApp aficionado? How does this work?
Well, I want to give a shout out to Unfazed, who is our, who's just absolutely awesome. So Unfazed makes a lot of our stuff, and our design team, of course. He kind of made the template for this, and then I was like, you know, I can't do this to Unfazed, so I'm just gonna go and maneuver the art around up there. But basically, he created the template for me, and then I just take your beautiful art and then I put it right on top of it. So. But I hate Canva. I will be the first to say it. I hate Canva, and I will hate it forever.
Yeah.
It's no Photoshop.
No, it's so frustrating. Have you ever used GIMP?
I have, yes.
Oh, I can't stand GIMP, because there's some weird idiosyncratic things that I've got in Photoshop that as soon as you start doing the wrong click, I just want to throw it out the window. It's like, why is it not highlighting that thing? I've clicked the thing and I want the marching ants. What's going on?
Oh man, we could talk about these softwares for days, because yeah, GIMP, actually when I was first thinking I might actually do an NFT and start making art again, digital art. Yeah. I downloaded GIMP and I started using that, and I was like, man, I really miss my Photoshop. You know, I've been a Photoshop user since like version 3 or something, and I went and bought it like 2 weeks later. I was like, I can't do GIMP. I can't, the shortcut keys and everything. I mean, drives me crazy.
Yeah, I was using Pixlr for a little while online. It just got too small for the kind of things that I want to do. I had a period where I didn't really need any upgrades on Photoshop, because I know they went to that whole cloud thing and that just killed me. So I've got a version of, I think, CS2, which is the last one or one of the last ones. I've got a Mac here that's like so ancient, but I need to keep it running on all the platform and everything it's got, so that I could just keep my all of my, because I've got the Ultimate Studio, but it's worth, it's not worth a toss now, is it? It's not worth jack. But it's such a brilliant tool, even the old stuff. But yeah, we digress away. Sorry, art.
Yes, art. Yeah, we. Yeah, I could seriously, because I mean, PaintShop Pro. Going back some years, man. I mean, this is back when website. But yeah, we won't go there. I wanted to ask you. Your thoughts on the, well, let's talk about what you like to collect, because we know that you're a brilliant artist, honestly. I mean, you're all over. It's great. But what do you like to collect personally for art?
Oh man, a lot of the stuff that I'd like to collect, I can't even come near affording. I look at so much stuff and I'm like, oh, this is so disheartening because of how expensive it is. It's almost like you go into a museum. Imagine if you went into a museum and they had prices on those pieces in the museum, what they would be. And that's kind of how I feel like going around in some of these. I'll go into these galleries. I'll go into like an On Cyber or something like that. I look at them like, this is amazing. And then I think, oh, good grief. I wonder if they'll do an art trade. I wonder if they'll trade with me for one of these, because I need that in my life. It's the stuff that I see is like it's not necessarily directly correlated with the stuff that I do, but I have an appreciation for stuff. When people can paint things, photorealistic stuff, I really understand how many hours you have to put in to do that kind of stuff. I'm interested in the whole gamification side of NFTs, and I have with the pieces that I've created, there's the four sensory overload Exiosi pieces. The way that those work is you actually have the IRL piece is tied to that NFT as well. So whether you want that or not, you own it and it stays on my wall, or you take it with you. And then there's like a gamification aspect that once you've owned that for 6 months, you get to be able to do some unlockable game with that. And there's some fun stuff that comes a little bit later down the lines. And I was just trying to get people to hold on to them, really. And so with that in mind, tying back to the collecting stuff, I like things that have like a game tie as well as being art. I think because we can expand the space and adopt more people by doing something that their expectation of art is sort of is superseded. You might say art, and to people it might be a sculpture or a painting, and that's as far as it goes. It's this static entity. Whereas with NFTs, because of the blockchain technology being involved, and we've got something that's immutable, but also we've got interaction and interoperable elements, we can take those in between different worlds and programs, and we can analyze them and do things with them. And you can't do that in the real world very easily. There are analog pieces with clockwork involved and that kind of stuff. And I don't want to take away from that. But what I do want to big up is the fact that we haven't even scratched the surface with NFTs and their capability. And so I like to look at stuff. There's a guy called Kurt Jürgen. I've collected some of his stuff. He did some AI pieces a little while back, and then I got involved having a chat on DM with him for a bit, and I spotted that he's got this whole On Cyber world that he'd built, where you could go and there was a game that you could play for his birthday, and you could run around in this world, and then if you uncovered these little tokens, then you get to pull an NFT, and then you get on a whitelist for his stuff. And it's those kind of things that are really attractive to me. I love that sort of thing. I don't know how you feel about those kinds of things.
Oh, that's my favorite part of the space, honestly. I mean, we share that very much. It's and that's where I guess I get a little bit, I get excited and I get frustrated. Yeah. because, you know, the excitement of being here is really the technology for me. It's like, okay, we can have, and this is what games were back when we were growing up, right? And that's why I think I resonated with NFTs more so than anything in crypto, in this blockchain space. But the idea that you could take something, an asset, right, and have it in a storage place that's yours, you know, like it's your wallet, you're walking around, you could use that asset in various different things. So when I think about games, you know, do I want to use this sword in every game that I play, and, you know, and then take it with me, and it becomes way more valuable to myself because I don't have to go and buy this thing that I don't really own from this company that doesn't really care about me. And then, you know, when I'm done playing the game, you know, it's done. It's meaningless at that point. Install the game and it's gone, you know?
Well, here's the thing, DC. I for the photographers that are here listening, there's a really cool idea that I had in my head. I'm not sure it's actually out there, but if somebody was interested in taking it further, I could probably put some time into doing something along these lines, where you've got this aspect where people take a photograph and you've got this beautiful photograph that you've bought and you now own. And wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to, if you visit that location, to somehow tie that together, whether it's like augmented reality or there is like some sort of, it acts as a marker when you hold it up in some sort of viewer. I don't know, but you could actually have like a location and the photo location tied together through an application that allows you to be able to do something outside of the experience of owning the photograph. And that could bring collectors and the location and the artist together into one entity, into like one group. Don't you think that would be cool? I haven't seen that, but that's something that's been buzzing around my head a little while.
Oh yeah, that would be fantastic. And I know it's funny that we past year, I think, and this, man, this space goes by really fast. I was just thinking about that this morning. Because I was looking at some transactions and I did, and I said, really, that was not that long ago. What the hell? But yeah, there was, I met some folks who approached us for something like that. But what you're talking about is an extension. And I think it would be cool, you know, and this is the kind of experiences that we're talking about, folks. It's like, instead of it being just, and it's okay to be just something, right? It's just, it's okay to be just
absolutely.
Art. Yeah. No one's saying that. No one's saying, and that was like I would say like 3 months ago, 4 months ago, that was like a topic of conversation, right? You had to have utility to be worth something, but you really don't, right? You could.
No, that's balls. Complete balls.
It's complete bull, right? The art is really the thing. But okay, so now just think about how cool this would be, though. You know, you go out, you buy a piece, and it's location based, like Sid said. I mean, that's amazing. You go out there, you walk close to it, and because you own the piece, you know, your phone, because you take all these digital devices with you everywhere, right? So you have your phone up, you're able to make a comment, you know, and it's like this virtual location. Think like Pokemon Go, if you played that. And I mean, the world did kind of at some point, but, you know, the gyms, right? You had the gyms and you were collecting stuff from the gyms. Those are location points. So if you're able to take your phone and the proximity, it recognizes you have the NFT. You're able to make a comment about that, about the art, and you share that with other people. Let's say there's 100 editions, right? And you're able to look through the comments and you're able to interact, and that sends a message over to the artist, and the artist is actually able to chat with you while you're sitting at the location of the piece and talk to you if they're so inclined, if they're alive, or you're able to see that, you know, that interaction, that chat between everybody who's ever been there and learn about the people who actually have bought the art and who actually have gone there. I think that's like, it's like that next level experience, just like when we were kids playing those video games instead of watching TV or, you know, listening to the radio. and not being able to interact with it, you're like interacting with the art instead, you know? And I think that that's the type of experiences I'm talking about. That's like, we're on the cusp of this happening. It's just people haven't done it yet.
Yeah, yeah. This is opening up the entertainment industry very much as well. I think there's a lot of adoption will come through that. As much as people might hate the fact that you might have a collector's card that you buy from Walmart, and in it you get this thing that you scan and it gives you an NFT that's worthless. It doesn't mean NFTs are worthless, but what it means is that person has been able to interact with the technology. They've found it seamless. They've enjoyed the experience enough to be able to go ahead and add that to their little wallet and stuff. And then they're an NFT owner, whether you like it or not. That person is now part of the ecosystem, and that's a wonderful thing. And that those are the vehicles that we need to be sort of open to, and not to be afraid of. We're not losing value, is what I want to say. We're not losing value by millions of people onboarding. We're not suddenly, you know, if everyone in the world suddenly decides to come on NFTs because they saw something on a television program and it was completely free and it seems like a fad, but they all jumped on and they did it. That's wonderful, because it's helping people to get involved with the technology. And so we also need to be open to letting the space that we might feel is precious is going to get trodden all over and new people are going to come in. We just got to be prepared for that.
Absolutely, we do. And I've in this short time that I've been here, I've seen it happen so many times so far, where, you know, new people come in and they trot over, you know, but you can't have that tribalism. You can't have that, like, oh man, I wish it was. I mean, sure, the first year I started this, it was probably my favorite year. I mean, there was so much to learn and do. And but, you know, fast forward to today, this is probably my second favorite year, because I'm able to meet some wonderful new people who are just getting and stepping in, you know. So it's going to happen like a million times before I go to my grave. So we just got to get used to it and enjoy it while we're here.
That's it. Absolutely. Yeah, we've just got to be open and inclusive. I think the more inclusive we are, the more that we just respect one another and stay open to what the future holds with this, the better positioned we are. Because I think as soon as you clam up and get yourself on the back foot about all of these things and get yourself in a tiz about it, you end up just getting in this negative feedback loop that's completely unnecessary.
Yeah, and those are the worst, those negative feedback loops. It's almost like you're stuck in a point of time and you just can't get out. It's terrible. I do have two more questions for you.
Do it.
Okay, here's the tough one. So describe the thing that you – I always love asking this question, sorry.
No.
The thing that you dislike the most about the NFT space, and alternatively – and this is just one question. Alternatively, the thing that you like the most.
Oh, okay. So the thing I dislike the most is the kind of Wild West edge that it still has, the issues that we have with security. I mean, when coming from a systems development background, the way I would analyze things is to look at security first over performance, and then build the performance after we've made it secure, because then you're not all going to be losing all your assets and stuff peeing out all over the place, and you haven't got enough fingers to plug the holes. That aspect is just like with Web 2. You're going to have these complete donks that are going to just try and scam you out of everything. They already do it on your mobile phone and whatnot. They're going to find ways of doing it in Web 3. And unfortunately, that puts a real downer, because a lot of the news that people chase is negative. You know, if you're in a company and somebody makes some slanderous remarks about that company, someone hears about it, and the first thing everybody does that works there is they jump on Google and they Google that particular point. And of course, that raises the power, the link juice behind it, and almost fortifies its position in the rankings within Google, and trains all the artificial intelligence to say this is important. And so we need to try to figure out ways of steering away from the negative BS, because it's still a small percentage, but it makes big news because it has quite a large impact. And so that I dislike. The part that I like is I love to be able to create things and for people to enjoy what I've created where they are. And the fact that this is international out of the box is just completely lit. I love it. I jump on and I create something, and somebody opposite side of the world can see that, love it, purchase that thing, have it. And I say this a lot, but it's my superpower to be able to create something that can move you, that can make you feel happy. And I don't even have to be in the room with you. I don't even have to be in the 20 or 30 rooms that all of the 20 or 30 people are in currently viewing that piece and just enjoying it. I think that is incredible, because you can't do that IRL, not unless you've got some sort of camera on the piece, or you've found it on a website. With these things, you go, this is mine. I actually have that I own. I can stick it on my own TV, and it's just there, and it's actually a satisfying piece that belongs to me. I love that. And the other really big thing I love is how digital artists, photographers, are not having to just boom out these numbers in order for them to just be dissolved on some bullshit stock website. They're actually recognized for their skill set, and the people that are collecting them are doing so because they appreciate what that's worth and they love it. And that's awesome. That's just such a positive outcome for the digital, for digital art. When I say art, I mean music, poetry, you know, photography, the whole shebang. Yeah,
I absolutely love that. Yeah, that's a fantastic answer. Both of them, actually. I agree with that so much, and I almost want to say that would probably, both of those answers would probably be my own too.
Nice. We're literally on high five heaven, aren't we?
I know, really. We got to get together one day. I think we definitely like a lot of the same things. Said
big time. I will do it. Next time I'm in Vermont, mate, I'll give you a wave.
Oh, please do. Yeah, we could definitely have some fun in Vermont, that's for sure. And I want to get over on your side of the fence soon, because it's one of the things on my bucket list to do. So one more question, and this will be our final one. But what's next for Citizen Artist in the blockchain NFT world?
Okay, there's some fun stuff coming up. I've got an opportunity that's later on towards the end of the year that allows me to be able to do some rather awesome stuff. And I'm building quite a bit in order to achieve that objective, if you like. So what I've been doing, I like to be able to constantly have like a stream, like a slow drip of pieces along the way. To sometimes what I do, like you'll see this, sometimes I'll create something because I'm making a mark, because I need to remember something on chain and I want it to be there. I want this to be there in the ledger, if you like, because the time and place was right and it means something to me. And then there are other things that are, this is a beautiful thing that I've put a lot of time and effort into, and I hope you enjoy it too. And if you do, please would you buy it? And that will support me in order to be able to create more of these things, because, you know, Sid's got to eat, that kind of mentality. So I've got a few little bits and bobs that I've actually put on hold that were kind of autumn worthy, but are going to be pushed on into the winter. And I don't know if you saw the Exiozi Spooks and Sweets and the Pop Soup stuff, if everybody saw that earlier on. But in my very early days of NFTs, I hadn't realized that Polygon was not Ethereum. Obviously, I'd not done my homework on that, and I just like went, yeah, let's do this. And I spent a lot of time putting this whole thing together and then realized that it was just going to bomb. So I burned it all. I literally burned the whole stack. It wasn't received the way it was intended. And not only that, but it wasn't even on the right bloody chain. So what I've done is to sort of celebrate that and all that it meant, I've re-envisioned the sort of project, if you like, the addition, in a whole new way. And I don't really want to go into too much detail with that, because you'll see later on in the year when it all comes together, it will make complete sense what I was getting at. But yeah, there's all sorts going on in the background. My cryptoversary of the Spooks and Sweets being minted is what is it? It's 22nd of this month. So I was going to mark that with a drop, and I was going to put out a primary color piece, a red piece, a yellow piece, and a blue piece of the Spooks and Sweets that I've hand rendered and then digitized for that. And I'm just going to do it as a number of editions. And I wanted to do a pay what you want, just whatever you feel that's worth, you just pay me that, and that's what it's worth. However, there's that whole issue with gas, which I'm just trying to get wheedled out. And once I get that right in my head, we'll put that together. So expect something on the 22nd. Yeah, that's where we're at.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I can't wait to see what you come up with. I'm just looking at your website right now, folks. And honestly, there's links to the website up above, and there's also links to a few of Sid's pieces. But Sid, you're multi-blockchain, okay? Mm-hmm. You're on Tezos, you're on Maker's Place, you're on Foundation, yep. OpenSea, right? And yep. And well, Polygon.
Yeah.
But no, honestly, it's awesome to hear from you, folks. Go check out those links. Check out Sid. Anything in the real world that you're doing? Because I am kind of curious about that side of you.
Yeah. Oh, I do stuff all the time. So yeah, in the real world, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's sort of. It's almost had to take a back seat because I've had a really busy time with my techie job as well. But yeah, it'd be pretty cool to get back to some of that. I'm not sure that we'll see anything until January in IRL stuff, because I'm not one of those kind of people that likes to just put stuff out all the time, constantly for the sake of it, because I've done it. I like to be pleased with what I've created. And if I don't feel that it's sort of met my mark, it's going to have to wait. And so a couple of these are not quite there, and they just need reworking a bit. But yeah, there's the IRL stuff, just like with the sensory overload stuff, there is another series that will be coming that I don't want to give you the title just yet, but think about some of the stuff that we talked earlier on in this conversation, and you'll probably have a hint as to what the style will be and what the kind of theme will be. So yeah, don't want to give you too much.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to see, because honestly, you come up with some amazing pieces. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. And I have a feeling that the people listening in also are looking forward to that. So,
well, that's good. Okay, can I just want one thing? Final thing is that when you, these pieces are designed specifically that you are to revisit them because something new will pop out to you. And there's a lot of information hidden within them and a lot of links between them all that I don't like to give away when I talk about them, because I want people to find it for themselves. And there might only be, in the next decade, there may be just one or two people in the world that discover that thing. But that would just mean the world to me that someone's found the missing link, the tenuous link or whatever, the hidden stuff that's within there. So keep your eyes peeled for one of my pieces is coming up to its 6 month ownership in December, and there will be a little game that you can get involved in on those lines. So just make sure you study them.
Man, that's fantastic. Thank you, Sid, for coming on the show. Sid is one of our exhibiting artists at Well, so we're really excited to have him on and have him hosted with us for this quarter. Thanks everybody for coming to the show and listening. It's always a pleasure seeing all these familiar faces and some unfamiliar faces. So always exciting to see everybody. But again, this has been fantastic. Any final words for our folks, and then we'll take off.
Yeah, final words are thank you for your support. Congratulations to everybody that's in the Q4 exhibit and artist team. You're an absolutely wonderful bunch, and it's just great to be a part of this thing and to see something grow from being so small to having such an incredible future. This time next year will be really interesting to be talking to one another. It will be super, super huge, I'm sure. There'll be some real big leaps and bounds that have taken place. So I look forward to how everyone's just going to get rocket fueled and sent off in all kinds of different directions. And God bless. Cheers for coming and listening in.
Absolutely. And folks, please go check out the links up top. I know I sound like a... but definitely go follow Sid and check out his work, because it's absolutely fantastic. I did post some stuff in the chat. This glitch, I know Nightmare's drooling on this piece for sure. the zero FG with the glitch, just unbelievably good. Yeah. And honestly, Sid, man, you could do so much, and I can't wait to see what's coming. And I do agree that that this is going to be quite the space a year from now. If you're here right now, then you're in the right place, I'll tell you.
Love it. Well, thank you for hosting, and take care, everybody.
All right. Bye, everybody. We will see you at the next event.